Hello and welcome to the first edition of a new IC podcast series, Bull vs. Bear, where we invite two company experts with opposing views into the studio to battle out their opinions. And where better place to start than Marks & Spencer's, a company which has divided analyst opinion. 9 brokers currently have the company on a buy recommendation and 12 say sell. And it also regularly causes fiery discussions in the office. I'm Megan Boxall, and my guests today are IC's sectors editor and current retail specialist, Harriet Russell, who tipped the high street giant as a buy in early 2016, but recently moved back to a hold, and John Heumann, IC editor, previous IC retail guru, and current M&S bear. So let's start with Harriet. What did you make of M&S's recent trading update?
Yeah, it was pretty bad, I'm not going to lie. The big thing for them has been a potential recovery in their clothing and general merchandise division, clothing and home, and that's been slated for years. It's done dreadfully for a long time. And when Steve Rowe, the new chief executive, took over last year, it was his big mission to turn that division around. The analysts and investors have been very patient with him. They appreciate it's not going to be something that is solved overnight. But the big thing that sort of really started to rock the boat was that in Q1 and Q2, M&S food sales started to slip by 0.1% on an underlying basis. In last week's update, that got even worse. The food sales were down by 0.4%. And now the analysts are really quite worried that that is hinting at the fact that M&S is losing its real niche position in the market when it comes to its food offering, which traditionally has been the backbone of that business. And it's going to make a potential recovery in clothing and home even more of a challenge.
So, John, that fed your concerns, that trading update?
Yeah, you're supposed to be the bull, Harriet. That didn't sound very bullish to me.
Well, I've got reasons to remain bullish on it, but that wasn't the question.
No, I'm being cheeky. I look at those numbers and think it's just a continuation of the concerns that we have held at the IC for quite some time. When I became editor, one of the earlier features that I ran was a very specific look at Marks & Spencer. And I worked with our retail correspondent at the time, Julia Bradshaw, to put together a piece which you can still find on the website called M&S Untangled. And the principal concern was that their stores were underinvested, that you would go into an M&S store and it would be badly organised. There would be what Julia described as a sea of trousers awaiting you with no real clear route through the shop. It was basically a very unappetizing in-store experience. The food bit, which has been doing very well, you know, there were even concerns about how that kind of sat alongside certain parts of the general merchandising division. It just seemed a bit of a mess and it needed a lot of investment. And at the time, the chief executive, Mark Bolland, was putting some of that in place for a project called 2020, which was designed to add an extra billion to profits. It hasn't happened. And the concern that a number of analysts looking at M&S at the time had, but this is such a large company, it was described by some of them as almost like a civil service, you know, very bureaucratic, things take a very long time to get done. And the problem was, therefore, that even though we kind of knew what M&S needed to do in terms of refreshing its ranges and making the stores a better place to come, investing in online, just doing it was really, really hard. And I don't see that anything's changed. It is still a massive bureaucratic beast.
But Harriet, that is one of your arguments, isn't it, as to why M&S isn't going to fail, imminently, because of its size, because of its track record of just keeping going, keeping chugging along here.
Yeah, I'm afraid of the phrase too big to fail, because I think we've heard that somewhere before. But yes, I know what you're getting at. You're getting at my argument, which I constantly trot out around the office, which that I don't think M&S is going to go bust in the next year.
Neither do I must add. You know, yeah. Even as a bear, I don't think it's going to go bust.
And I agree with a lot of the concerns that John's just raised. I don't disagree that M&S, when you go in there, it's not a fun place to shop. My mum always says it looks like a jumble sale. They, you know, during the last tenure under Mark Bolland, they did loads of promotion. I mean, the product was on promotion for something ridiculous, like more than 300 days of the year. They were on promotion. And Steve Rowe has made some real progress on that front. They are selling a lot more full price product, which is exactly the same thing which Next reported at the beginning of this month too. And that is encouraging, particularly in this sort of consumer climate where wages and disposable incomes are under a lot of pressure. If people are willing to pay full price for it, that's a good sign. And Steve Rowe has also been very draconian in his response to the store estate. He's already announced a whole swathe of closures. He's completely cut back the international business. And now, after last week's update, people suspect that he might start doing it to food too. They've been opening those M&S food stores like nobody's business. And inevitably, that starts to hurt your like-for-like sales performance. We see it a lot in the restaurant sector as well. So he's got to really change the strategy on that front as well. But I don't think he'll be afraid to do it. He really is quite sort of ruthless when he wants to be.
But investors don't like that sort of thing. So, you know, for last year, food's growth, and there was growth on an overall basis, was driven by new store openings.
Yeah, on a total basis.
On a total basis, new store openings. So having opened new stores, the first thing you then do is go and shut a load. And investors start to think that this is a company that doesn't really know where it's going.
Or does it? I mean, it depends on which way he phrases it. If he says that he's really realigning the store estate, making it leaner and saying to them, well, we had it in this position in one town and it was sort of serving like a demographic that didn't really work for us, so we're going to move it and obviously open a second store in that town in a more attractive part of that town, perhaps, and immediately close the other one, then to me, that makes sense. That's a good strategy. It just depends on how willing the analysts are to sort of bear with it, I think, a bit longer.
Mm.
The big problem with food, I think, is not so much the operation of it, which we actually discussed at length on last week's company show, if people want to go and catch up on that. But for me, you know, that business has been incredibly cash generative. It's not just been a backbone in an operation sense, it's been a backbone in a cash sense. And that, of course, has underpinned M&S's status as an income play because its dividend yields in excess of 5%. So the question then is, well, is the cash conversion going to come under pressure as food goes into a slow decline? If they can't turn that decline around, then the cash coffers come under pressure and suddenly the dividend looks in danger. And I agree, that is a big risk.
Mm-hmm. So it's the dividend that is keeping you at hold at the moment?
Yeah, because in the next 12 months, I don't see it going out of business. I can tell you two businesses I do see as falling this year, and M&S isn't one of them. And so why not hang on to the shares, they're cheap as chips, and get paid the dividend for another year?
They could get cheaper.
Calling the bottom is an impossible task, but if you're going to sell here, you're selling at a big low. I really don't see the appeal.
Indeed, you are selling at a low, I'll give you that. I mean, you know, when we wrote this piece in 2013, the shares were 3.85p. They're now just north of £3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you would have, if you'd followed our advice at that point, you would have been okay. I mean, actually, the share price did, you know, see quite a significant rise after you wrote it.
Well,
only
it did,
resettle at this lower level now.
Yeah, and I was telling people to buy north of £4, so... Yeah.
And they would have made money in the short term.
In the short term.
You know, and what we've always talked about in this feature is that you know, you can look at these short-term swings in trading and think, yeah... Okay, so there seems to be a recovery brewing here, but actually our concerns are much more long-term. My concerns, sorry, not ours, we differ. my concerns are around, you know, where is the place for M&S in the long term? How does it fit into the evolution of the high street? The high street is changing. There's no doubt about that. The high street, in some cases, is becoming, you know, irrelevant in certain
and
sectors.
I'm writing the coming sector focus on this very issue, on the future of the high street. What is it really going to look like? I was saying to Megan earlier today, actually, that I walked through Clapham Junction Station last night, which... inevitably actually has an M&S food in it, and that is not one of the stores that is closing down, but there are two stores in that small ticket hall which are on the brink of going down. Joy, which isn't a listed company obviously, but that's closing its doors. It's got big foreclosure signs in its window. And then Accessorize next to it, part of the whole sort of Monsoon chain, has 70% off stickers all over its windows. And you just look at it and you think, that is the near-term future. That's what we're looking at. You know, the smaller, less agile players who have a really outdated business model and stuff that no one wants, it's going.
Indeed. I mean, so what I would say, though, we've talked about, you know, M&S needing store closures, you know, restructuring. My point is, going back to the sheer scale of this business, is that's a huge job.
Yeah.
You know, one or two stores is tinkering at the margins. To do anything meaningful requires a massive commitment to almost a complete change of the business model.
Also, what, you know, people don't often talk about with store closures is that as much as it saves you money potentially in the long term, it actually costs you money in the short term, because you've got to be paying redundancies, you've got to be having all of these really sort of immediate overheads that no one really talks about. The market tends to sort of brush them aside because they see it as inevitable, I guess. But John's right, it's a huge task, but I've made it clear that I think holding the shares can probably do you no harm in the next year.
Mm. I mean, I do worry about the dividend. I mean, you know, we're interested in the sustainability of that. It looks on the face of it reasonably well covered.
Yeah, at the moment.
But net debt is quite substantial.
Net debt's substantial. And as I say, it's really the cash, which has... We did a cash clinic on M&S probably about a year ago now as well. And that's probably still findable on the website. But yeah, it's one of the best when it comes to cash generation on the high street. So if you're going to be arguing from that perspective and from a dividend point of view, then I would say in the next 6 to 12 months, you're in okay hands. But you've got to keep an eye on what food is doing, because if that really starts to get a lot worse, you know, that has been the backbone and that has underpinned a lot of the shareholder returns.
Mm. I mean, you know, we look at There's been some changes of management there recently. Steve Rowe, who's an M&S lifer, is now the chief executive. And that was obviously greeted positively by the market. But no matter how good someone is, to fight on one front is difficult
one
enough.
Thing,
but now
yeah.
he's fighting on, you know, firefighting on two fronts. You know, food, which wasn't a problem, is now a problem. And general merchandise is still a massive problem.
Well, and for Steve Rowe, it's a big PR debacle because he was hailed as the saviour of M&S food during the last recession. He was in charge of that division and the whole dine-in for £10 was his brainchild almost 10 years ago now. But, you know, we were talking about this earlier, weren't we? The ranges that they've got in that division, the whole dine-in for 10 quid is 10 years old. And if there's one thing that consumers want, it's fresh ideas, it's new stuff. I think we were talking on the podcast last week, weren't we, about particularly in their food go offering, the sandwiches and stuff, they don't have a meal deal, which is hard. The others on the high street, even Boots has a meal deal.
And they I can never work them out, incidentally. I never know work out what goes with what. But
I'll come with you next time. But yeah, it's a real problem. It just doesn't feel very modern, I don't think. And, you know, with the increasing health conscious as well, I think that's going to be an issue. So yeah, it needs work. It needs work.
But you think that work is there to be done and there is some hope of salvation?
Look, if one person can do it, I'm not really sure who is more qualified than Steve Rowe. He's done it before. There's literally no one else with his track record in that division. So if I'm going to put my eggs in someone's basket, it's going to be his.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would say about turning around a business like M&S, which, as I say, is a very long-established legacy business. It has these big shops. We all know about it. And it's opening more of them. There's no doubt about that. It has opened a lot of shops in the last few years. But the big trend in retail is obviously online. And
yep.
You cannot dispute the fact that M&S is a substantial laggard in the online space. It has not got it right.
No,
and to me, that's a big concern too. You know, as more shoppers shift their spending online, as more shoppers want home delivery for food, which they do. Yeah, M&S is just going to see those sales shift somewhere else unless it can satisfy what those shoppers need.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be doing it. I've got a note by Liberum, which shows M&S is at the worst end, the lowest end of the scale for online sales.
Yeah, it's been...
Growth, that is.
Growth, yeah. It's been extremely difficult for them. Someone like Next, for instance, obviously had their directory business, so they had basically distribution already set up just to go on, like literally turn the website live one day. M&S had nothing, so they've had to start from the ground up, similar to Debenhams. Debenhams has really got it wrong, but M&S was really slow off the gate. The thing that I would say is encouraging about online is, as John says, it is growing, and actually their click and collect statistics are starting to rival the likes of John Lewis, who I consider one of the leaders in that space in terms of getting it right on a cost efficiency basis. And also from a food perspective, I think John's also right. We used to say, or sort of the common thinking, I suppose, was that M&S doesn't need to go online in the same way that Sainsbury's or Tesco's has, because it's not a weekly shop place. It's a treat destination. But as the food ranges start to feel outdated, people are going to be doing that less and less. And also as incomes are under pressure, you don't do posh food. So whether they can do something like Morrisons has done, which is a supply agreement with Amazon or another big online deliverer, Ocado maybe, then that could be their ticket. They would just have to swallow their pride. The thing about M&S is they love to do everything under the M&S name. And I appreciate that because it is a bellwether brand for the high street. It's almost a national treasure. But if they can sort of just get on board with the way that people are shopping and as I say, swallow their pride and join forces with someone who's already got it in place, then for me, that I think that would be received well.
Yeah, I think something has to be done there. You know, the great irony in me being a bearer of Marks and Spencer's shares is that I probably spend more in their food shops than I ever have done, only because there's one around the corner and I use it for top-up shopping.
Yeah, I was saying to Megan the other day, they've opened one at Southfields Tube, which is giving away exactly where I live to all of the listeners. That sounds safe. But, you know, it's pretty brand new and I come out the Tube and bang, it's right there. So, you know, when I come home after the gym, guess where I'm going to go and get dinner?
I think that they are a premium offer. They are more expensive. I do see a lot more discounts in food at certain times of day than I have done in you know, perhaps a year ago. If I have to be really harsh, I'd say the quality does not match the price.
No, and the discounting angle is a very interesting one, actually, because, of course, what we've been writing about a lot this month is that inflation, as a macroeconomic trend, has been incredibly beneficial for the supermarkets. They've finally put an end to years of discounting, which was prompted by Aldi and Lidl, and they've finally found a reason to start keeping prices at least stable, if not raising them. And M&S, ahead of Christmas, even ahead of the big day itself, was cutting prices on food. And that just shows you that they're not shifting the stock. So you've got to ask yourself why. And I think it's for all the reasons that we've discussed here today. But yeah, that's a really worrying sign.
But you think they can get it right? You think they can turn this around from here?
I think there are obvious things, which quite frankly, if I was at the helm of M&S, I would at least be floating to my board members. I don't know, obviously, what the research is behind it that would tell me that those are bad ideas. But I think if you're going to make a bet on anyone to be able to do this, I'm really not sure who else they can get in besides Steve Rowe to do it. And of course, you hinted at other management changes. They've got a brand new head of design for clothing in Jill McDonald. Ex-Halford, she's coming to head up general merchandise. And you've got Archie Norman as well, who's obviously got a big reputation in the city as the new chairman. So there's kind of a bit of a dream team going on there.
I do like Archie Norman. Yeah. I think he's got a track record of doing some great stuff. ITV, Megan, is one of your companies. He's done did wonders
there. Did a good job
there. But what I would say is we've had the dream team story before with Marks and Spence. I mean, Mark Bolland was a dream team appointment, and they paid handsomely to get him. We had some real, you know, top level hires in things like e-commerce. There was the appointment of Laura Wade Gerry a number of years ago. It was seen as the move that would transform their online business, and it didn't happen. And this begs a question. It goes back to what I started out saying. Is Marks and Spencer's too big to fix? Is it just a bureaucracy and you can tinker at the edges, but you know, to do something substantial, even for a man of Steve Rowe's calibre, is going to be very difficult.
Yeah, and I agree with you. In the long term, it might be too big to fix, but in the short term, it is too big to fail.
Well, I think that is a great place to leave it. Just to reiterate, the IC currently recommends holding on to M&S shares. It's going to be a rocky ride, but the dividend is worth holding on to. John, Harriet, thanks very much for your thoughts, and thank you all for listening. We'll be back for another edition of Bull vs. Bear soon, but in the meantime, head to our website for more IC podcasts.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.